family? Everybody doing good? Regardless, you still got to be doing good, right? Amen. Well, I tell you what, this Shabbat service on Saturday morning, I tell you what I'm going to tell you, you'll feel what I was feeling. I felt nothing but mush because I had something I was carrying for almost 2 weeks. And 2 weeks ago, I was supposed to do Wednesday night, and some things happened. I think Scott did it. And so there were some things that I had ready to speak about. And even at that time, I was kind of troubled because, you know, the message at that time was, you know, Yaakov's ladder. You know, remember the ladder? And Yeshua is our ladder to the Father. He's the Word. He's the living Word, and He's our only way to the Father. And so when I was going through that message and going into the next Torah portion, I think I was going on my way to work or something. Anyways, I was doing like I do every morning. I get into Psalms 119, and that gives me life every day. Psalms 119 is the Word, the Word, the Word. As you read it and listen and read it, it fills you up with life, and just it starts my day every day, Psalms 119. And when I was going through there, I went through Proverbs. I think it was in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 18. And I sent this to my wife. I sent it in a text message. I said, "Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth." And my wife texts me back. She says, "Have you ever looked up the word fountain?" And so she got me digging. So I was sitting there digging, and I looked up the word fountain. I looked this up in Esau. You know, it gives you the Hebrew words. Let your fountain be blessed. And I'm telling you, this was almost 2 weeks ago. And so I looked up H4726, Makor, from H6979, properly something dug, that is a generally source of water, even when naturally flowing, also of tears and blood, euphemism of the female, pudina. You can go look all that stuff up. I looked it all up. A fountain, an issue, a spring, a wellspring. And then H875 is beer. From H874 is a pit, especially a well. A pit, a well. I'm looking up everything on wells. I'm like, okay, we're on the ladder, but now I'm going back because we haven't talked about wells. I'm like, Father, why are you putting me on the wells here? So I started studying up on wells. And going back, it was like going back, because we'd been past that already. So I went back, you know, Abraham and the well. I started looking all this up. And then I started looking up, I went immediately to John chapter 4. Y'all remember John chapter 4 this Shabbat? I went there almost 2 weeks ago, and I looked up, it's Pegay, G4077. Probably from G4078, through the idea of gushing plumply, a fount, literally or figuratively, this is a source or a supply of water, a fountain, a well. And so I read John chapter 4, verses 3 through 15. I copied and pasted from my other notes and brought it over here. He left Yehuda and went away again to Galil, and he had to pass through Shamaran. So he came to a city of Shamaran called Shechem, near the piece of land Yaakov gave to his son Yosef. And Yaakov's fountain was there. And I just paused right there, and I just got in deep thought. I'm thinking about Yeshua. When you read this, he's weary, and he's at that well, and it belonged to Yaakov. It belonged to his forefathers. And it just brought me back to, this is his well. This came from them, and it all came to him. It's his well. And so as you read it, just like Pastor talked about, so Yeshua, being wearied from the journey, was sitting thus at the fountain. And it was about the sixth hour, a woman of Shamaran came to draw water. And Yeshua said to her, "Give me to drink," for his taught ones had gone off into the city to buy food. And the woman of Shamaran therefore said to him, "How is it that you, being a Yehudi, ask a drink from me, a woman of Shamaran? For Yehudim do not associate with Shamaronim." Yeshua answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of Elohim and who it is who says to you, give me to drink, and you had asked him, and he would have given you living water. And the woman said to him, and see, the whole time I'm sitting here reading this, 2 weeks ago, I'm like, man, it's his. And he's talking to her about it. She has no idea. And we talked about that. Are you greater than our father Yaakov? And she has no idea who's sitting before her. And then, who gave us the well and drank from it himself. And you know, just like Abraham, when he had to find a burial, when he had to go for the burial site, it was his, but he paid for it. This is Yeshua's, but he's telling the woman and talking to the woman. And Yeshua answered and said to her, everyone drinking of this water shall thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water I give him shall certainly never thirst. And the water that I give him shall become in him a fountain of water, springing up into everlasting life. And the woman said to him, Master, give me this water so I do not thirst, nor come here to draw. And when I read this, I thought about the ladder. He's the ladder, he's the way to the Father, and he's the fountain, he's the living Torah, he's the living Word, he's our life source. And he is the fountain of living water. And I held that, and I had so much other things to talk about I'm not going to get into, but I text Pastor while he was in Florida. And I said, on December the 7th, I texted him. I said, thank you both for climbing the ladder. I said, I'm right behind you. I make mistakes and I fall down a rung or two along the way at times. But I keep climbing and trying, working my way up. When weary, Yeshua came to Yaakov's well, the fountain. Our fathers left us a hope and a future, a ladder and a well. That's what they left for Yeshua. If they had not left something, what would Yeshua have had? Yeshua followed his father's word and did everything he said, and everything was lined up. He's 7 steps ahead of us all the days of our life. He was all ahead of Abraham, Yishak, Yaakov. Now we're talking about Jacob, Yaakov. And that's another thing. I started looking, and so let me finish reading this. I said, our forefathers left us a hope and a future, a ladder and a well. I said, thank you for showing us how to climb the ladder and drink from the well. It's for us and for our future. The same well that was dug, Yeshua came across. As he learned and was taught, we too have been given by him. I thank you, Father, for my leaders and teachers, for their safety, for their health, and to be a ladder and a well to those around them, there and back, in the name of our Master Yeshua. Because whenever we follow him, we become ladders. And we become wells for other people. Love your neighbor as yourself. And it's the same thing that we do as he did. And so that's what I held on for a while. And they never responded back. But there's a reason why they don't respond back. Because when Shabbat came around, and he started going to John 4. And look, let me tell you about Shabbat. I went over those messages 4 or 5 times this week. And every time I turn it on and listen to it, it's like I've been given life again. You just start weeping. You're energized. And you see it. You see it clearly. But all that answered my questions because I was back there by the computer on Shabbat morning. And I'm like, okay, I understand what Shechem is. I see it. But what is this Dothan? So I started looking up Dothan like we do on Esau. But the little thing on there was hidden, and I couldn't see that it was 2 wells. I couldn't find that definition. So I had that question, what is Dothan? What is Dothan? And when he got up here and started explaining everything, look, when you're going through your week, and the Father's sharing with you, and then all the body comes together and starts putting those pieces together, it's incredible. You get all those answers that you're looking for. But in Shechem, that's where we drink from. In Dothan, you get lost in your thoughts. You can't get caught up in your thoughts. You got to stay in Shechem where the fountain is. I also put down in my notes, thus we must learn not to do. It says in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 15, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Yeshua is the well I should drink from. There's a ladder that has been built for us to climb and a well that has been dug for us to drink from, and that's the living Torah. And see, I had all that ready, and I was diverted the last Wednesday because of the weather. We couldn't come and speak about anything on Wednesday night. And so I just held on to that. When Shabbat service came and all that came out, the Father gave us that word. I'm like, this is incredible. And you just start eating up on that. And then on the well, how did Jacob show kindness to Raquel at the well? According to verse 10, he rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of his mother's brother. In Genesis 21:25-33, Abraham and Abimelech at Beersheba. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized. And Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this deed, neither do you inform me, nor did I hear until today. So Abraham took sheep and cattle and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech asked Abraham, what are these 7 ewe lambs which you have set by themselves? And he said, take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand to be my witness that I have dug this well. So he called that place Beersheba, because the two of them swore an oath there. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. And Abimelech rose with Pilcah, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. And there's a lot to talk about at the wells, but the very last one that I got to right before we got into the next Torah portion was in Genesis 37:20-29. And Joseph was thrown into a dry well, a pit. And that made me think about it. I'm like, a dry well and a pit. And here we go into the Shabbat service and talk about all we talked about, all the Father had to give to us. We got to come to that place. Minnow, we got to stay like Yaakov did, and Yeshev, to settle, to live and to live. Now, getting back to Psalms 119, I go over that every morning. And I saw Sister Randy come to the house last night. And my wife came upstairs and said, Sister Randy has given us a present. And I said, what does she have? And she said, look, she baked us some bread, and I'm going to read this to you. I made copies of it because it meant a lot to me. Because every one of these things that she brought, the trinkets and the meal, the little breads and all, this is what it has on them. It means a lot to me. She's listening. One of them has a little card right there that says, I rejoice at your word as one who finds great treasures. Psalms, I said to my wife, I said, Psalms 119. I hear it every morning. Psalms 119, verse 162. The next one. How sweet to my taste has your word been, more than honey to my mouth. Psalms 119, 103. I said, honey, before she could even say this, that's Psalms 119. I hear it every morning. His word is like honey to my lips. It's life to me. I need your word every day, Father. I thank you for Psalms 119, and that's what fills me up every day. More than fine gold, more than riches. There's another one. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Psalms 119:105. And I'm going to read to you what she gave. She said, I've been thinking, is it okay I read that? Is it okay? I've been thinking on just how good Jehovah has been to me. How thankful I am that he has kept his word from the very beginning. This time of year reminds me that he will always keep his promises. He will always perform miracles. He will always be the light to lead our way. I am truly thankful to him for all the blessings he has given me, and I count you as one of my blessings. I am so very thankful that you are part of my life. I hope these small tokens bless you and remind you how precious His word is for our lives. Shalom. Thank you, Sister Randy. But the most important part of all those, as you've given it, was the word that was on every one of those. His word is my life source. It means everything to me. And I've been telling him pretty often, last week and this week, I had a couple of days where fear tries to sink in and you're trying to think on your job what to do in a certain situation. It could be fishing, it could be hunting. I don't want to go into great detail, but you just start thinking and you got to stop and say, Father, listen, I could think of all kind of things, how it's going to go, but I have no idea how it's going to go. I need your help. I need your help every day, Father. I don't know how to do this, where I'm going, what I'm doing. I need your help. And His word is my help. And I'm reminded of His word. His set apart spirit reminds me of His word. And I get to go. And I get to do things. And some incredible things happened last week and this week, even this morning. Because I get there and I do my job and I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do in my job. And I say, okay, I got all this. I got all that. I did this. I've been speaking like this. I've been speaking like that. It's all set. The next thing that needs to happen is out of my hands. I can't make the rest happen. And it just happens. And it's like, wow, it's a wow. That's all I can say. It's just a wow, and it happens. So you just got to keep doing what He says. He's my help. He's my guidance. He's my counsel. He's my everything. And without Him, I can't do anything, especially with the set-apart spirit. I want to appreciate you, Sister Randy. Thank you so much for that. That was a wild moment, too. So we have in this Torah portion, Vayeshev, Hebrew 4, and he lived or he dwelt. And I'm reminded of the word meno, stay. You know, it's something how in this Torah portion, Joseph is a foreshadow picture of Yeshua. His father sends him to go tell his brothers, and he's going to be his brother's help. He's going to help them. He's going to tell them. And it's the same thing that Yeshua was sent to go tell them. It's a help. And so he sends them down there and they reject him. They reject him in all kind of ways. They rejected Yosef. They rejected their help. And and there was a word when we talked about deceit. And it's in Psalms 119, 118. You have made light of all those who stray from your laws, for falsehood is their deceit. When you look up the word light in Psalms 119, 118, the word light is H5541, is Salah. Salah is to make light of, to toss aside, or to reject. So they rejected their help. Yosef's brothers were in Dothan. What were they doing in Dothan? Dothan is an adulterous, pagan-rooted place of worship to satisfy the flesh. We cannot drink from two sources, keeping us tossed to and fro. In Ephesians chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, it says, until we all come to the unity of the belief and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the completeness of Messiah, so that we should no longer be children tossed and borne about by every wind of teaching, by the trickery of men and cleverness, unto the craftiness of leading astray, but maintaining the truth in love, we grow up into all respects into Him who is the head, Messiah. So on Shabbat morning, I was back there looking up at the map of the journey that Joseph was to take to go to Shechem. And when I was looking on this map, it shows from Shechem to Dothan is a day's journey. A day's journey from Shechem to Dothan. And I was thinking about this. Joseph, later on in Torah portions to come, he said, don't leave my bones here. And so from that point on, Joseph doesn't realize it, but when he leaves Shechem, He's not going to return back to Shechem until he comes back in a box of bones. He has no idea where his journey is going to take him. But even though he comes back in a box of bones in Shechem, his journey saved thousands and thousands. We talked about that on Shabbat. There's a lot of things that he had to learn along the way. And you know, when I was reading through this, through Joseph's life, you know, there was a lot of things that he went through. I was sharing with Pastor Josh, was talking about it. You know how, you know, there's trials and temptations that came his way, but he stood firm. You know, he had some things come in his life where he just refused to do those things, and he was rewarded for it. It says in Jeremiah 17:13, "My people have committed two evils. They're broken cisterns that can hold no water. For my people have done two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, to hoe out for themselves cisterns, cracked cisterns, which do not hold water." Every Shabbat we read this, and I'm going to read it again. This is what I think about during the week. Where you can't lean on your own understanding and think on thoughts or the past or things in the past. You got to stay focused on what the Spirit is telling you, His Word. Yeshua had to learn this, and it says in Isaiah 11, 1 through 3, "And a rod shall come forth from the stump of Yishe." Does that sound familiar? I think about that. It stays in me when I'm working throughout the day. When I'm working and my mind starts to wander on things, I'm reminded of His Word. Reminded of His Word. The Spirit reminds me. "And a rod shall come forth from the stump of Yishe, and a sprout from his root shall be fruitful. The Spirit of Yehovah shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom, the Spirit of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, and the Spirit of knowledge, and the fear of Yehovah, and shall make him breathe in the fear of Yehovah." And this is the key right here. "He shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears." You can't go by what things look like. You can't go by what you're thinking. You can't go by what things sound like. You got to stay focused on what he said. You got to minnow. You got to stay right here. Stay in Shechem. Stay with the fountain. Stay right here. Everything in Shabbat's message on that morning, I've listened to it over and over and over again. And that's where we're to stay. That's where we stay focused. And then we're going to get into the Torah portion, chapter 38. We're going to start where we left off in chapter 38. And when you read about Judah went down. We're going to learn in there about what going up and what going down is. Going up is good. Going up to Jerusalem is good. Going down is not good. We learn about those things. Going down is not good at all. And that's where they were headed. They were headed, you know, when I looked on that map earlier, like I was saying, there was a trade route in Dothan. Coming along Dothan with the Ishmaelites and all that, and as Joseph was sold on that trade route, and that's how his journey went through there. If you go look on the maps, it's pretty good to go look at the maps and kind of get an eye view of what it looked like. But in Genesis chapter 38, this is where Judah, he starts on his own journey. He's on his own journey, he leaves his brothers, and it's not a good journey. Genesis 38. "And at that time it came to be that Yehuda left his brothers, and he turned aside to a man, an Adullamite, whose name was Hira. And Yehuda saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he took her and went into her." And so as we just start off reading here without even looking at any slides or anything, we already know if we have already been learning in the words of Yehovah and the Torah, we know all this stuff is wrong. We're not supposed to do this stuff. It's already wrong. He's already headed down the wrong path already. And Yehuda saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. And she conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son and called his name Shelah, and he was at Kizib when she bore him. And Yehuda took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ur, Yehuda's firstborn, was evil in the eyes of Yehovah, and Yehovah took his life. See, bad stuff's happening all the way down. We're going down. And Yehuda said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. And Onan knew that the offspring would not be his. And it came to be when he went into his brother's wife that he spilled on the ground lest he should give an offspring to his brother. He was already selfish right there. And it wasn't about doing anything for his brother. It was what he got out of it. And he didn't want to have anything to have somebody else carry on somebody else. He wanted to have something. It was a mess already. But what he did displeased Jehovah, so he took his life too. So you see cause and effect. It's not like Jehovah just took people out. We see people's choices cause things to happen. Genesis 38:11. Then Yehuda said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house until my son, Shelah, is grown. For he said, lest he also die as his brothers did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. And after a long time, the daughter of Shua, Yehuda's wife, died. And Yehuda was comforted and went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Dulamite. And it was reported to Tamar, saying, see, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. And she took off her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat at the entrance to Enim, which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. And Yehuda saw her and reckoned her for a whore, for she had covered her face. And he turned aside to her by the way and said, please, let me come into you, for he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what do you give to me to come into me? And he said, let me send you a young goat from the flock. And she said, do you give me a pledge until you send it? So he said, what pledge should I give you? And she said, your seal and your cord and your staff that is in your hand. And he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. And she arose and went away and removed her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Yehuda sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. And he asked the men of that place, saying, where is the cult prostitute who is beside the way of Enim? And they said, there was no cult prostitute in this place. And he returned to Yehuda and said, I have not found her. And the men of the place also said, there was no cult prostitute in this place. And Yehuda said, let her take them for herself, lest we become despised, for I sent this young goat, and you have not found her. You see, he was doing all this in secret. He's still doing wrong. He knows he's doing wrong. He's messing with the wrong things. He's trying to do it as a pledge to try and get the stuff off. It's supposed to be a goat. If you remember reading the scriptures about a goat, the scapegoat and all that stuff, he's doing all this stuff to try and get it off of him, but it doesn't work that way. He's trying to keep everything in his own hands. It says, and it came to be about 3 new moons later, 3 months after, that Yehuda was informed, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has whored. And see, she has conceived by whoring. And Yehuda said, bring her out and let her be burned. But she's got something. Yeah. Jehovah's given her something. When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man to whom these belong, I am pregnant. And she said, please examine whose these are, the seal, the cord, and the staff. And Yehuda examined and said, she has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah, my son. See? and he never knew her again. And it came to be at the time for giving birth that seed twins were in her womb. And it came to be when she was giving birth that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, this one came out first. And it came to be, as he drew back his hand, that see, his brother came out, and she said, how did you break through? The breach be upon you. So his name was called Peretz. And afterward, his brother came out who had the scarlet thread in his hand, so his name was called Zerah. And so on slide 187, we're going to start in chapter 38. Chapter 38, verses 1 through 2. So Yehuda leaves his brothers. Yehuda leaves his brothers. After Joseph had been sold into slavery and all the brothers lied to Jacob, Yehuda leaves his brothers and turns aside to Adullamite. And you got to think about this. They came back to the pit. I'm going to get ahead of myself. Because Judah's all about money. I read the slides and he's all about money. And so Joseph's gone. They don't know what's happened to him. So they're all in fear. Remember, where does Dothan lead? Dothan leads you lean on your own understanding and your own way, and you get yourself in a bind. We need a Savior. We can't do it on our own. We need His help. That's why we're supposed to stay at Shechem. So Joseph had been sold into slavery, and all the brothers lied to Jacob. They lied. All of them lied to Jacob. And Yehuda leaves his brothers and turns aside to an Adullamite. He leaves. He leaves them. Genesis 38, 1. And at that time it came to be that Yehuda left his brothers and turned aside to a man, an Adullamite, whose name was Hira. And Yehuda saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went into her. The Hebrew word that is translated as left, on other translations, went down, is Yarad, Strong's H3381, which means to come or go down. Here goes the words coming, going down. Descending or ascending, going up. A common pattern or thread that we see in Scripture is that whenever the reference is made of going to Mishrim, it is seen as going down. Whereas whenever the reference of going to Yerushalayim is made, it is referred to as going up. And what we can clearly see from this is that to run after the pattern of the world and the flesh with as many lusts is a downward path that leads to destruction. There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is death. There's a way that seems right. And I'm telling you, there's many times, even as long as I've been in the ministry, that my mind tries to play tricks on me and say certain things, and I have to revert back and listen to the set-apart spirit. The set-apart spirit will help you, and being obedient. If you're obedient, the fear won't be there. But if you're being in disobedience, sure the fear is going to be there because you're on your own, buddy. You're all by yourself. The Father steps back and lets you go on your own, just like He did them. They went down to Dothan, they went there and did their own thing. They didn't listen. Their Father told them specifically where to go and what to do. Bring the sheep to Shechem and take care of them there. The water, the well is there, the one fountain. Remember Yeshua? He's our fountain. He's the living Word. He's our way. But they go to Dothan. They got to go on their own way. Second guessing, mind, thoughts. We've got to cast down imaginations. We've got to keep our mind on Yeshua. We've got to keep our mind on the Word. It said, whereas to walk in the true commands of Elohim and trust in Yehovah is a picture of being able to ascend or go up and draw near to Him and Messiah, the very path of obedience and Messiah that leads to abundant life. In Isaiah chapter 31, verse 1, it says, woe. When he says woe, that's not good. Woe to those who go down to Mishrim. This is Isaiah 31, 1. Woe to those who go down to Mishrim for help and rely on horses, who trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen, because they are very strong. See why he says, he shall not decide by the sight of his eyes, nor the hearing of the ear, but with righteous judgment shall he decide. It says, who trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong, but who do not look at the set apart one of Israel, nor seek Jehovah. In Zechariah chapter 14, 16 through 17. And it shall be that all who are left from all the nations which came up against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year, going up, to bow themselves to the sovereign, Jehovah of hosts, and to celebrate the festival of Sukkot. And it shall be that if any of the clans of the earth does not come up to Jerusalem to bow himself to the sovereign, Jehovah of hosts, on them there is to be no rain. Got to go up. Up is good. Going down is not good. Isaiah 2, verses 2 through 3. And it shall be in the latter days that the mountain of the house of Jehovah is established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills. And all the nations shall flow to it. And many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. And let him teach us his ways, and let us walk in his paths. For out of Zion comes forth the Torah, and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. So here, Yehuda was in a sense going down after the lust of the flesh as he took a Canaanite woman and married her. The Hebrew word for the term turn aside is natah, which means to stretch out or spread out, extend. So you think about the tribes, all the tribes that were scattered abroad. You think about being spread out. That's natah. And you think about Yeshua when he says, I am the vine, and you are the branches. That all ties in. It says in the word natah, Strong's H5186 can be also understood in Scripture as being a reference to the tribes of Israel who spread out their branches as a derivative of this root verb in matah. Strong's H4294, which means a staff, a rod, a branch, a tribe, a branch of a vine, and is translated as tribes. In Bamidbar, Numbers 30, verse 1, when we understand this clear picture of being a branch, we're quickly reminded of the word of our Master. Here it is in John 15, 5. I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who stays in me, minnow, he who stays in me, and I in him, he bears much fruit, because without me, you're not able to do anything. He's our life source. He's our only way. Yehuda here, as a metaphoric picture, is a lesson of those who have denied and rejected Messiah, sold Joseph into slavery, and have not remained in the truth, but rather have run after the flesh and the doctrines of man. Yehuda had spread out his branch, but in the wrong way. He had, in a manner of speaking, not stayed in the truth, and the fruit of his actions reveals this as he becomes unevenly yoked with a Canaanite woman. Here's the word natah in Strong's H5186. Can also be understood as turning aside from the true right ruling and justice, as we see the connection of this word used twice in the following verse. In Shemot, Exodus 23:2, do not follow a crowd to do evil, nor bear witness in strife, so as to turn aside after many, to turn aside what is right. So what they did, in a sense, was they turned aside Joseph, they turned away from the word. They rejected the very word that they needed that was going to help them. And that's what many do today. They reject the Torah. They reject the living word to do what they think is right in their own sight. Do not follow a crowd to do evil, nor bear witness in strife, so as to turn aside after many, to turn aside what is right. By Yehuda turning aside the Adullamite expresses this clear picture of turning aside from Jehovah's justice to man's corrupted form of justice. The word for Adullamite, Strong's H5726 means justice for the people. And Adullam was a Canaanite city. Yehuda's action is a picture of what so many have done and still do today as they turn aside to man's system of justice rather than obey Yehovah's Torah. This shows a lack of obedience and can be a reminder to us of the period of the judges in Shoftim, where each one did what was right in their own eyes. And that's what it talks about in Judges chapter 1, verse 25. In those days, there was no sovereign in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Israel was clearly warned not to do this before they entered into the promised land. In Deuteronomy 12:8, do not do as we are doing here today, each one doing whatever is right in his own eyes. When people reject the Torah, they will resort to doing what is right in their own eyes. And here in these accounts is a clear shadow picture that we can learn from as we see how this chapter's events flow in teaching us what happens when we cast aside the Torah. Joseph had been cast aside, and Yehuda turned towards a counterfeit system for satisfaction and growth. It's a very blinding place to be. Those who turn aside to their own crooked ways will face the consequences of rejecting the Torah. In Psalms 125, verse 5, but those who turn aside to their crooked ways, Yehovah shall lead them away with the workers of wickedness. Peace be upon Yisrael. The name of the Adullamite man to whom Yehuda had turned aside to was Hira. Strong's H2437, which means a noble race. And it comes from a primitive root verb, havar, H2357, which means to be or grow white or pale. To grow pale can be a result of having a loss of blood to the face as a basal response to some strong emotional feeling, such as humiliation. And Yehuda may have realized the wickedness of their actions against Joseph, and in his guilt, he turned aside to seeking an alternative. And that's what many people do today. They go and find something else rather than the very thing that gives them life to sustain them. They turn to something else, and they find something else, but it don't last very long. And they turn to something else, and that don't last very long. In Isaiah 29:22, therefore thus says Yehovah, who ransomed Abraham, concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob is no longer put to shame, no longer does his face grow pale. Yehuda had now joined himself to that which he should not have, and we are warned in Scripture to not be unevenly yoked with unbelievers, as the consequences of doing this can be harmful and very detrimental to our lives. 2 Corinthians chapter 6:14, do not become unevenly yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? And what fellowship has light with darkness? Every day that I wake up, I have to put on the Torah. I have to read it. I have to be fed for me to block out the darkness, to block out all the ways of the world and everything that it has. Because it doesn't take long, because like Scott said a long time ago when he was here on a Wednesday night, he said, just a little bit of darkness. So all it takes is just a little bit of darkness. And before you know it, you've been sucked in. It don't take much. Your mind starts thinking, and what you think is wrong, and what is wrong is right. You'll be calling good evil and evil good. You'll be gone. It don't take long. You divert from instructions or what he's telling you to do, and you'll be gone really quick. Do not become unevenly yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness and lawlessness, and what fellowship has light with darkness? Yehuda saw a daughter of another Canaanite, and he took her for himself, and she was the daughter of the Canaanite man whose name was Shua, Strong's H770, which means wealth. This is pretty incredible when you start learning all this stuff about Judah. This once again is a clear picture of turning to the wealth of the nations rather than walking in the Torah of Yehovah. Yehuda married into money. In history, we're able to see how Yehuda has always had an obsession with wealth and prophets. And he has the one who came up to the, and he was the one who came up with the idea of selling Joseph. Remember that? He was the one who came up with the idea to sell Joseph instead of killing him, as he recognized that there would be no gain in killing Joseph, but there was a way in Yehuda's eyes to make some profit off their brother. He was going to make profits off of him. Killing him wouldn't have been no good. Well, selling him would make money off of him. It was evil all around. The desire for riches and wealth has a way of causing many to turn aside from walking in right rulings of Yehovah. The deceit of riches chokes out the word, and the seed of truth become fruitless. Matthew 13, 22. And that sown among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the worry of this age and the deceit of riches choke the word, and it becomes fruitless. In verses 3 through 5, Yehuda's sons, the sons that were born to Yehuda from his marriage with the daughter of Shua, were which means awake, arouse, awaken, expose. And Onan is an H209, which means strong, vigorous. And Shelah, Strong's 87956, meaning a petition, at ease, prosperity. Chasing wealth will birth the arousal of a strong desire to be at ease and chase prosperity in the process. When the daughter of Shua bore Shelah, Yehuda was in Kazib, Strong's H3580, which means false. And this word comes from the primitive root verb, Kazab, Strong's H3576, which means to lie, be a liar, fail, told lies, deceive, and disappoint. And we're clearly able to see from the actions of Yehuda that he reached a definite place of falsehood and deception in his life, all starting with the rejection of Yosef and selling his brother for gain. And you know, all these brothers, they all did that wrong thing and they all took that road. And they all, when you go down the line, see, they end up in a famine. They end up in a bind. Joseph is on the right route, and it's the mercy of Yehovah he shows towards his people. Because if he had not done that, they would have all died. They would all be dead. Yehuda, as we know, means praised. And by these accounts, along with the clear meanings of the names of his sons and the places he settled in, we can recognize how so many today have been given over to falsehood, deception, and lies in their vain attempts at praising Elohim while they are chasing the alluring and tickling ear messages of a prosperity gospel that is leading many people astray as they so easily cast the true identity of Messiah and the need to walk in the Torah of Elohim aside while believing that they have a right to physical and material blessings here and now. This is a classic picture of false worship, which is no worship of Elohim at all. The so-called prosperity gospel, which is widely promoted by westernized charismatic Christianity, is a false message, and many are sadly worshiping in vain as they follow such falsehood. What we must also take note of here is that the name of the daughter of Shua is not mentioned, and so we see a clear message of how this union with a Canaanite woman had resulted in nothing but trouble. It's nothing but trouble, the route they took. Verses 6 through 7. Yehuda took a wife for his firstborn son, and her name was Tamar, which means palm tree. Was evil in the eyes of Yehovah, and his life was taken by Yehovah before he had any offspring with his wife Tamar. We're not told why he was evil, but we see here a play on the reversal of his name. So his name was and the Hebrew word used here for evil is ra, meaning bad, evil, wicked, harmful. Notice how the name of is spelt with ayin and resh, while evil is spelt in the opposite way around, with the resh being first and then the resh and the ayin. His name may have meant awake or alert, yet He was evil in the eyes of Yehovah, and this can in many ways also be a reminder of us how we are not to think that we are strong on our own, but rather that the joy of Yehovah is our strength, and this is also a clear warning of how we are to be sober and awake and not be found sleeping under the lies and deception of falsehood. What we can see here is how this man, who by name was called one who was awake and strong and had simply abandoned his character. And I just want to stop there. I'm just thinking about Joseph, all that he went through. He bore the load. He had to go through some things. Everything in his life that he did was so important. It was so incredible. The dreams that he had, he portrayed his character the way he's supposed to. There's a word I can't never remember, and I always ask my wife for it. What is that word? You got to remember that word. How he presented himself. His conduct. I can't never remember that word. How he conducted himself. I think about that when I'm on the workplace. How I'm going to conduct myself. There's times in the past that I got frustrated because of things going on and it wasn't going my way. And I spoke things. And later on, I wanted to learn from that by looking at Joseph's life and the way he spoke and he conducted himself. So I said, this time when I go on a job, no matter what happens, I'm going to conduct myself right. And I've been finding myself in those areas, conducting myself right, and I see a reward because of it through the past years and months. You do what is right. You do like Joseph did. Because if not, you can't just pass go. You don't get a free pass. You got to do it right. That's not living life and being rewarded for doing wrong. You have to do right. And so when you do right and you conduct yourself, then it becomes the character of Yehovah. That's what it is. It's his character. Again, his word is immovable, unshakable. It's living and vibrant, and it can't have anything added or taken from it. So we're fooling ourselves if we think we can just go ahead and do whatever we want and also have his word. It doesn't match. It doesn't work at all. We have to conduct ourselves in that way. And that's what Joseph did. He conducted himself the right way, and it proved the word of what it's supposed to be. What we can see here is how this man, who by name was called one who is awake and strong, had simply abandoned his character. It wasn't the character of Yehovah. It was the wrong character. We must remember that Yehovah certainly was watchful over the firstborn of the son of the ancestor, Messiah. And while Tamar was given to the firstborn in marriage and had no offspring, Yehovah still made sure that Tamar would carry the line of the seed of the promise, as she was the wife of the firstborn and destined to be in the royal line of Messiah. Onan-Er's brother was instructed by Yehuda to take Tamar as a wife and have a son with her to raise up an heir to his brother, which we see being later documented as a clear Torah instruction. In Devarim 25:5-6, when brothers dwell together and one of them has died, see, it goes back and tells you. It tells you the instructions. When brothers dwell together and one of them has died and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not become a stranger outside. Her husband's brother does go into her and shall take her as his wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn son which she bears does rise up for the name of his dead brother, so that his name is not blotted out of Yisrael. That was the instructions. While I recognize that this command had not yet been given to Yisrael as a nation, we need to understand that this was the clear instruction, command given to Onan from his father Yehuda, and he refused to listen to his father's command, which is a picture of refusing to heed the Torah. That's what happens when you refuse to heed the warning of the Torah. Onan knew that the offspring would not be his and would affect the inheritance of his own offspring. So he refused, but not in the right way. He did not tell his father that he could not take her, but rather abused the position of being offered his brother's wife for sex only, and made sure that he did not impregnate her as he spilled the seed on the ground. This displeased Jehovah, and so Onan's life was taken too. When you neglect to walk in the clear Torah of our Father, our life too will be demanded of us. It's not a good result. In the story of Ruth, we see how the nearest kinsman refused to redeem Ruth, and so the redemption right could fall to Boaz. In Ruth 4:6, the Redeemer said, "I am not able to redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. Redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I am not able to redeem it." Devarim carries on and tells us what was to be done to the man who refused to redeem the wife of his brother who had died and had no offspring. Devarim 25:7-10. "But if the man does not desire to take his wife's brother, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate to the elders," that's for judgment, "and say, 'My husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He does not agree to perform the duty of my husband's brother.' The elders of this city shall then call him and speak to him, and he shall stand and say, 'I have no desire to take her.' Then his brother's wife shall come to him in the presence of the elders and remove his sandal from his foot, shall spit in his face and answer and say, 'Thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house.' And in Israel his name shall be called the house of him who had his sandal removed." In the story of Ruth, we see how this happened according to the Torah. In Ruth 4:7-8, "And this was formerly done in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm every word. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a witness to Israel. So the Redeemer said to Boaz, 'Buy it for yourself.' Then he took off his sandal." Onan acted wickedly and deceived his father while satisfying his fleshly lust for his deceased brother's wife. This was nothing more than a wicked act of adultery, and Jehovah did more than remove his sandal from his foot and spit in his face. He put to death the one who performed such wickedness. That was a seriously evil act. You sit there and think about what he did. It was really selfish, and it was all about himself, self-pleasure, just for a moment. Yehuda then told Tamar to live as a widow and wait until Shelah was old enough to become her husband, and he would then raise up offspring. Tamar then went to live in her father's house, and after some time, Yehuda's wife died. And being comforted by his friends, he went up to Timnah, to the sheep shearers. Timnah means a portion or a territory, and comes from the root verb manah, or manna, which means to count, number, reckon, and appoint. Tamar was told that her father-in-law had gone to Timnah, and by this time Shelah had not been given to her as wife, as promised. And so after realizing that the promise had not been kept, she took off her widow's garments and disguised herself, and she went and put a veil over her face and sat at the entrance of Enayim. I don't know how to say that word. Enayim, which means two springs. Strong's H5879, two springs, and can also be understood as opening of the eyes. As this word can be constructed from being the dual of the root verb, an I in Strong's H5869, which means eye. And from this, we can see how she covered her eyes in order to open Yehuda's. Yehuda took her for a prostitute, and he lay with her as he turned aside to her by the way. Once again, we see Yehuda turning aside, which is the word nata, turning aside, which we have already discussed. And here's another picture of him turning from the straight path and resorting to whoring. She asked him what he would give her for her services, and he said that he would send her a young goat from the flock, which at first glance may seem insignificant. However, we can be drawn to seeing the picture of the goat, which is sent into the wilderness on Yom Kippur. As a scapegoat, the first goat of the two goats of Yom Kippur, we are able to see in the goat that was slain and blood put on Joseph's robe and bare a sheet in Genesis 37:31. All that connects. All that goes together. Remember Joseph and his coat being torn to pieces, and they used the goat to put the blood on it? Tamar then asked whether he would give her a pledge until he sent the goat, and he asked her what pledge she wanted. And the Hebrew word used here for pledge is Ebron, H6162, which means a pledge, security. It comes from the root verb Arab, H6148, meaning to take on a pledge, give in pledge, exchange, and become surety. She was asking for some surety from him so that he would not just leave and never send what he had promised. As a noun, the word Ereban is only used 3 times in Scripture, and all in this account between Yehuda and Tamar. However, the verb or action of giving a pledge, Arab, is used 22 times in Scripture. The first time we see this verb being used in Bereshit, Genesis 43:9, when Yehuda promised Yaakov that he would be surety for Binyamin, and has primarily been the major reason why Binyamin was always under the protection or leading of Yehuda. And so the house of Yehuda represents both Yehuda and Binyamin. And you see the 10 tribes, and then you see the separation of Yehuda and Binyamin. You see all this as you read through this, why and how and where, as you go through the Torah portions. And that's all I have in the Torah portion. So we got through chapter 38, and this is in the Torah portion of the slides. And there's a lot more to go through. I went through these last couple days, and I was like, I went ahead and just read the rest of the story a couple of times. I would like to have some more slides to go along with it. But I spent a lot of time really going over the Shabbat message from Saturday. That meant a lot to me. And you just listen to it over and over and over is the message that really clearly went with everything. In Psalms 119:86-87. All your commands, all of them, all your commands are trustworthy. They have persecuted me with lies. Sometimes you're bearing the weight in Shechem. There's a lot of weight to bear in Shechem. They have persecuted me with lies, and he says, help me. And that's what I find myself asking all week long. I always ask him, Father, help me. Help me. They almost made an end of me on earth, but I did not forsake your orders. Don't forsake his orders. Keep his orders. And that's about all I have for tonight. Pastor, you got anything? Nope. But I've been staying focused on that message on Shabbat. That right there has really sustained me. It's where we're supposed to be. You know, I was talking to my wife before the Shabbat service during the week, going over all of this. There was a song I came in humming the other day. That the king of my heart Be the wind inside my sails, the anchor in the wind, and the waves, oh, he is my song. And I didn't listen to it on the radio, nothing. It just popped in. Father does that. And she said, man, I need that. And so she took that. I know she was going to put that up here. And I'm up there. And I'm just going through everything, just staying where I'm supposed to stay, in him. You know, all that we're going through in here, everybody's going through it. I got to talk to Brother Eddie the other day. I had some great talks, huh? Real good talks. Talked to Pastor Josh. I sent Brother Jack a prayer this morning. I passed by them this morning, and I saw all the guys. I was like, boy, they're going to have a load of people today. And so I stopped my truck right there. And I said, Father, I just thank you for shielding them, protecting them, giving them the wisdom to do it. And then I sent the text to Jack. That was my prayer. I sent you the prayer. I was praying it. I sent it to Jack. I sent this to Jack. I said, thank you, Father, for your love and protection and good sound minds going out and coming in on this day you have allowed us to be in. To all my brothers on their trip today, in the name of Yeshua, and I told us I love my family that the Father set in my life. I love all my family that he set in my life. But getting back to that song, you just let the Spirit lead and do whatever he wants to do. And that song was playing, and I'm worshiping, and Pastor Josh walks in. And I'm like, I'm not set by emotions. I'm just giving the Father praise and glory and honor, because the whole time, everybody that stepped out, everybody's not in. I'm not speaking deceit. I'm saying, Father, whatever it takes. You said in your scriptures, you can take the hook and hook them by the mouth and bring them back, whatever it takes. I don't know how, but you know how. But I'm praying, Father, to save them, bring them back, keep them shielded, keep them protected, all of them. I don't want to see no destruction on anybody's life. I want to see everybody return. I want to see everybody shielded and protected. Bring them back. Just keep them shielded and protected. And so Sister Randy brings that to my house last night. Everybody is loving everybody and thinking about each other and praying for each other. And the Father's keeping us sustained. And it's only by His Spirit. It's like Pastor said, we can't do anything without His Spirit. It's impossible. It's the only way we're empowered. That's what I tell myself when my mind starts wandering. I say, hey, I'm doing everything I know how to do. You know, I've been wanting to say this. I didn't want to say in detail, but I got to share this. Because maybe y'all go through the same things, just in a different arena. This is my story, but maybe y'all go through the same things. I had a fishing trip the other day, and this fishing trip's been set up, for months. And it was just an anonymous call. It was just a call from a guy saying, hey, I'd like to set up a trip with you for a Wounded Warrior deal. I'm thinking Wounded Warrior, you know, that's a free deal, you know. He didn't ask how much the price of the trip is or anything. I said, okay, and this was months ago, during the summer. I said, all right. I said, you know, I thought to myself, I'll just do a free trip. It's okay. It's no big deal. You know, I'll do this. Whatever you want to do, Father, that's what I'll do. And so I set up this trip, and I hadn't heard nothing for a while, and then I got a text message. Hey, we got the guys coming. One guy has been literally blown up, and he has no legs, and he's got artificial ones and all that. We're going to be able to get him on and off your boat. I'm like, okay. He still never said nothing about a price or this and that. And so a couple of days goes by, and then I get a text message. And it says, hey, we had a good time yesterday. Boy, we loaded up on fish. We loaded up on bull reds and this and that and da-da-da. We're ready for tomorrow. And I went out that day, and we didn't go after any bull reds. We went after some trout and little reds close to the marina, and I haven't been after any bull reds in a while. And so instantly, the fear starts to come on you because somebody else done took them out, you know, and now I'm being pressured here. I got to, you know, give them what they've been given already. And it started to intimidate me. And I'm out on a boat, and I'm starting to wander. Your mind starts wandering. Fear starts to grip you. You're like, man, they caught a load of fish yesterday. Now I got to go find those fish. And now I don't even know if this is going to be a free trip. And I come home and tell my wife, I said, honey, I'm just going to throw in the towel. It's probably going to be, you know, a tough thing. Look, I'm not going. And fear starts setting in. You start thinking and wandering. And, you know, you've been through this a million times with Yehovah. I don't know why these things come like this, but it's kind of like a check or something. I don't know what it is. But I'm sure y'all can relate on y'all's end, on things going on in y'all's lives, whatever job, whatever y'all got. So fear's starting to grip me. I'm like, I don't even know, I'm impaired. Your mind's just wandering. And so I had to sit down, and I started praying. I said, Father, I'm going to have to trust and rely on you. I'm going to do this. I don't know where I'm going, what I'm doing, and how I'm going to do it. But I'm just going to ask you to help me, and I'm going to do the best I can for these people. And so it's there. It's real. You getting yourself set up. You following the Spirit. He's telling you to do this. He's telling you to do that. I looked at the ties and all the patterns and everything. I got everything set, all the poles, everything. And I go meet up with the guys at the condo. And the guys come out, and here comes this guy with artificial limbs, and he's walking on them like they're legs. And I'm like, wow, check this guy out. He's really walking with these legs. And this whole trip was a blessing to me. The whole trip was incredible. This guy gets on the boat. He steps in there, and we get on the way. And I'm just thinking, I'm going to go down the Southwest Pass. It looks like it's going to be a nice day, and I'm going to go look for some bull reds. That's what I'm going to do. So I head on that way. And so we get out there at the end of the rocks and we're starting to fish. And we're not doing a whole lot. You know, we're catching a fish every now and again, a trout, a red, this or that. And so the stories start coming out, you know, about, yeah, we fished yesterday right across on the other side over there and we caught quite a few bull reds. I'm like, oh, okay. And they told me the guide's name. And I'm like, oh, you know, my heart's in my throat again. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I said, Father, you're going to have to do something. I don't know what else. It's really slow. And I keep looking out in the distance, and I see birds, hundreds of birds diving out there. I'm like, God, look at the birds. And you can just feel that pull. Won't you just go out there? I'm like, I don't know. And so I said, we're going to go check out them birds out there in a minute. And I asked the guy about his legs. I said, hey, man, I said, your legs. Oh, I said, what happened? He said, man, I got blown up. You know, that was over 10 years ago. I said, well, look like you're doing good. He's like, listen, I said to myself, I'm not going to be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. I'm going to walk, and I'm determined to walk. And he started doing his homework and everything, getting remedial and everything, and he got those legs. He said, it took me 10 years, but I got my legs. I said, that's great faith, man. That is incredible. I said, they got people that stay in wheelchairs. They get huge. They don't want to make a move, you know. I said, but this guy here, he's determined. I'm going to walk again. And he's on his legs walking. I'm just amazed by this story. And we just ease on out there by the birds. Everybody throws their poles. The bull reds is taking lines left and right. All right. So I put the trolling motor down and I stay. They caught over 30 bull reds. They're like, man, we ain't never caught bull reds like this. This is incredible. And so I thought you said you came out and caught them yesterday. He goes, no, it was a couple days ago. We take a break in between the days. I'm like, okay. So then the real stories start coming out. It wasn't all that great of a trip. And this other guy's telling me, he's like, hey, man, listen, I want to tell you the truth. He says, I ain't never had a trip like this in my entire life. This is the most bull reds. My arms are hurting right now. So I'm like, Yehovah is just showing all this stuff up, you know. And still, I don't know if I'm getting paid or not. So I get back over there to the condo. And we go upstairs. And, you know, he says, hey, meet me up at the condo. And one of the guys had asked me if I had some shirts. And I said, yeah, I got some shirts. So I brought two shirts. And so that's when I found out right there. They wrote me out a big check. Way, way more than it was supposed to be. They explained to me two of these guys are really wealthy guys, and every year they like to take care of two guys that are wounded warriors that come out the military. They take care of them. They pay for their trip. They pay for the fishing and everything, and that's what they do for them. But they didn't let me know any of this stuff. I had no idea. I think the Father kind of hid that on me to test me out in this one. But you get back and you're like, man, you can't go by the sight of the eyes. You can't go by what you're thinking. You just got to trust. Listen to me. Listen to me. And he tells you that. He says, just listen to me. Just listen to me. And the same thing happened with the duck hunting. Last 2 days, we've been having a spot of ducks in this area. And then they kind of disappeared in and out. I didn't know how it was going to be. And so Doc tells me, he says, Chad, if we don't kill no ducks there, I'm going to turkey trap. I'm like, so the pressure's on again. And so I'm like, look, I got all the ducks ready for the deep water. The decoys had short string and weights where we was going to go today, and they would have never touched bottom. They would have floated away. So last night I had to take every one of those decoys, add the string to them, and make it longer so they wouldn't go away. So it took me some time last night to get all that done. Doc asked me, what are you doing? I said, I'm getting all this stuff ready for tomorrow. It's going to be deep water, and the wind's going to be blowing. So I get all that stuff ready. I'm like, man, I'm hoping I don't get all this stuff ready for nothing. But I did my homework. I did everything I'm supposed to do. So I got there, and it was like 3 foot of water. We blinded up in the canes, got it all set. And I go by Willow's Cut. I go park. I'm sitting there. I'm like, Father, I did everything. I did everything you told me to do. I can't make the birds fly, come, go. Whatever it is, it is. And boy, the gunshots start going off. The first thought comes to mind is, oh, they're shooting them teals up. Boy, they're shooting them teals. Well, at least they're getting some teals. And I just hear that voice. Won't you just trust me? Won't you just listen? I say, man, Pastor, he prays over all his stuff all the time, and he is loaded with big ducks over there. It's your hand that's on him. I know it's your hand on him. And so Doc calls me a little while later. Come over here. I go over there. I said, well, y'all got some teals? He goes, no. It's all gray ducks. He said, we are having incredible. I just look up. I'm like, you just got to trust. You got to listen. You got to trust. Just do what he says. And they loaded up. They got the 18 big ducks today. It was incredible. And yesterday, they didn't have a whole lot of ducks on the lease. Today, it was drove after drove after drove. He said, where all them ducks are going? I'm like, I think they're going on your lease over there towards Grand and Tiger. We went over there today. And there was, when I say thousands, I mean, they black in the sky. It looked like gnats just swarming everywhere. Every part of the lease had ducks. And he said, tomorrow morning, I want to go just kill a bunch of teals and be in early. Well, I said, they got teals there, they got teals there, they got teals there, they got teals. Where do you want to go? He goes, I don't know where you want to go. I'm like, look, I got all this set up for today. You're going to have to set up tomorrow. Wherever you want to go, we'll go. But they got ducks everywhere. And so the Father sent the ducks. They're there. You just got to trust. You got to listen and rely, and he'll take care of you, just like he did with Joseph, in the pit, to the prison, to the palace, right? He took care of him through everything. He conducted himself right. I remember that word. Finally. Something about that word, conduct, I just couldn't remember it till tonight. Thank you, Father. But conduct, he had to conduct himself. And so he got, that's how that goes, so. All right, that's all I got for tonight. I just had to share that. I'm going through that each week. I'm sure y'all going through stuff each week that y'all, faith to faith, glory to glory. When you look into my glory, you'll be instantly changed. And it's pretty incredible. Anybody got anything else?